Eken.
Is that it? Okay, tonight our main speaker is Gwen F. Please help me give a warm welcome.
All right, good.
Okay, let me get my timer up here. I'm not any good without it. My name's Gwendolyn. I'm an alcoholic. I'm here. I recently, my goodness, you might not want to leave that on this counter because I, like, talk with my hands and make noise, you know what I mean?
Wow.
I do. I just can't help myself.
Okay,
cool. There's Italian in me somewhere. So, anyway, I'm here from Palm Springs, California. I came up the beginning of the year, and a friend of mine has a business up here, and so I just come up to kind of help him get situated, not involved with his business at all. We're longtime friends from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm retired and don't have anything better to do. You know what I mean? Like, I could stay home and, you know, it's warm at home, and not exceedingly warm for this time of year even. I mean, it should be about 120. The day I drove up here, it was 119, and I got up here, and it was like 52 degrees that night, right? And I was like, Jesus Christ, I only brought one little sweater. The next weekend, I remedied that. I don't really have heavy coats. I've lived in Palm Springs for 30 years. And, you know, we don't have much cold weather down there. And when it gets warm, I try to leave whenever I can. You know, and so far, I've succeeded for the last, I don't know how long. I'm married to my fourth husband, but this one's hung on for a long time. I'm not quite sure when we got married exactly. I think it was around 95, but I'm not positive. Somewhere in that area. It's over 20-some years, you know what I mean? He's been around for a lot longer than that. He's been sober 28 years, and we and I were good friends before we ever started dating. I don't know why we ruined that friendship, you know what I mean? Surefire way to ruin a friendship is, you know, start dating them. And for me, anyway, I should speak for myself. I'm a little hard on the men. And I like this one. I still like him all these decades later, right? I actually like his temperament. And he's way tougher than I am mentally, which is actually hard for me to believe. I don't know if I've ever been with a man that was tougher than me mentally. I'm tough. And, I came from tough people. Came from a lot of alcoholism, drug addiction, and they were, you know, they were weird to boot, right? They were educated. You know, they made sure we all got good educations, our teeth were done, we all had car, you know what I mean? On the outside, it all looked pretty good. And there wasn't any, like, serious perversion, there was just a lot of, you know, disconnect because of the alcoholism. You know, you can't be emotionally present. Well, if you drink like my family, I'll put it that way, if you drink like the people in my family, you can't really be emotionally present. And it turns out that we're the kind of people that, you know, I've had uncles that have died of, you know, overdoses. I've had uncles that have drank themselves to death in hotels. I've had aunts that have just about drowned in the river trying to have a good time, you know what I mean? They took up skiing at 65, if you can imagine. I mean, so totally alcoholic, right? And lots of fun, and lived large, all of them, but they were very tough temperaments when they were drinking. All of us are blackout drinkers, almost all of us, I should say. There's a couple in the family that aren't. And they're speeders with alcohol, so they don't go into blackouts. You know, I had my little Coke and alcohol run because you don't hit blackouts. And if you're doing any form of speed except Black Beauties, so you young people don't know what those are, but those were great diet pills in the 70s. Yeah. You could stay up for 3 days on a couple of Black Beauties. You know, you couldn't even drink yourself into a stupor on them, right? And so I use additional medicines along the way, mostly amphetamines of some kind, just to try to stay out of the blackouts. Because the blackouts were so severe, sometimes I'd get lost for like a couple of weeks. I literally wouldn't know where I'd be. And I'd find a trail of credit cards when the bills came in, and I could kind of maybe piece together a piece here or there. Or I might remember part of a night, you know what I'm saying, like, my first husband, when I met him, we were great drinking partners, but he was a half Indian and I'm a quarter Indian, so we don't really mix alcohol that well. And we fought terribly. And when we first started dating, you know, I got drunk one night in a bar and I went to the house. I must have had a babysitter or something. I don't know what I did. Anyway, I managed to get my kid to my mother somehow. And I drove to my best friend's from Upland, California to San Francisco in a blackout. the whole way. I remember getting gas in Covina, and I don't remember anything else until I'm knocking on my buddy's door in the middle of the night, right? And that's a kind of, you know, I mean, I'm like powerless to live a different kind of existence if I'm delving in that world at all. There is no, all bets are off. And I knew that long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't think that, I won't say that I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. I don't think I really understood what alcoholism is. Let me rephrase that. I didn't understand what alcoholism is. I thought it was a drinking problem. Or, you know, I always had this excessive temperament long before I drank. I was a very intense little character. You know, I want to win or I don't play, that kind of character. I don't want to study to learn. I want to play golf really well, but I do not want to take lessons. I don't want to go practice hitting that little ball. I just want to go out and play 18 holes, and I don't even care if I beat everybody. I just want to sort of not embarrass myself. But I won't go to, I won't, you know, I wanted to be a concert pianist at one time too, but I don't want to practice. I remember seeing this TV show when the TVs were this big, and there was this concert pianist on there, and I thought to myself, you could have been a concert pianist, right? No, you have to practice if you want to. I'm not Beethoven, for crying out loud, and I'm tone deaf, so, you know, I mean, it doesn't really work very well. So it's just total manic behavior all the time, right? Very intense, very driven, and like nothing better. I remember being 15. I was mortifyingly shy. It's hard to believe now. I've developed a crusty character here. And you have to survive in AA. You have to develop a little crust. You got to be able to take the good days and the bad days, and you have to be able to take the people how they are, and none of us are always in good shape. You know, I can tell my best friends just, oh, and I, are there still children here, or did we get rid of them? Are they all gone? Because
yes.
I swear. And I don't like that about myself. Do we have one hidden over there?
Yeah, she's got mics on.
Oh, he's got mics on. Perfect. Okay. Turn it up. Because, you know, my best friend on a good day or a bad day, I'll tell them just to F right off, right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Fucking need you. I don't fucking need you. I can guarantee you I don't need you. Now, you're my best friend. We've been tight like this, right? On a bad day, I hate everybody unilaterally. I'm not one of those women that just hates her old man or just hates the employer or the employees, whatever the case is at the moment, the banker. I'm not one of those broads. When I go from spiritually fit to unspiritually fit, I hate everybody, everything. I could have, that could have been my fourth step. I hate everybody and everything equally. They've all misunderstood me. They've all screwed me over in one way or another. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how a nice girl like me got to AA is how, what I thought in the beginning. I was 25 years old when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was 1977. That was long before cell phones, you people. No internet. You know, thank God. I'd have got on the internet and made a fool of myself for sure. Facebook would have kicked me off the first week. I would have never been able to stay on Facebook. I'd have said, oh, she's too foul for us. And I'd have had to go to some weird site, right? And they're out there. So, that's a whole other story. I won't go there. So when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sister was in Al-Anon. She had married an alcoholic. You know, what is a good? She's the only one of us that doesn't drink. Her and my mom. They weren't drinkers. They don't have problems with alcohol. Let me put it that way. My sister eats, and my mother was a for real Al-Anon that needed help. You know what I mean? I'm not sure that she wasn't sicker than the rest of us. You know what I'm saying? The rest of us were at least having a party on the way to jail. My mother was just unhappy 28 hours a day. And because all of these alcoholics and drug addicts around her would not behave, she could not get us to conform to anything, you know what I mean? And there was only four kids, one still a nice, she's a saint, you know? I should tell this part of my story, actually. My mother and father's name, for real, I'm not even stretching the story here. I like to elaborate a little on stories sometimes, but this is actual honest truth. My mom and dad's name are Mary and Joseph. One set of my grandparents was Mary and Joseph. My oldest sister, the saint, is Saint Mary. And my baby brother, who died of a heroin overdose, was Joseph. And I was supposed to be Joseph. I was between Mary and Joseph. And they didn't have a girl's name picked out for me. They didn't do all the stuff they do nowadays. They didn't. What do they call that with the ultrasounds? Yeah, ultrasounds. They didn't do all that stuff back then. And they had no way to test. They said, "Oh, you missed your period, your belly's growing, you must be pregnant, you're throwing up. You know? You quit smoking, you quit drinking coffee, and you quit drinking orange juice. Sure sign you must be pregnant. You're throwing it all up, right?" So I quit drinking and drugging the first time I was 17 years old. I'd only drank and drugged for 2 years. It was the 60s. It was a good 2 years, I might add. It was a fun time to be alive in this world. I was in Southern California, born in Pasadena, not far from here. And so I just, you know, live between where I live down there, down south, and San Francisco most of the time, right? I'm one of the few people that was on our way to Woodstock, but the party was so bad that we had on the way going, we never made it all the way. We got almost to Illinois. We got just stuck. We were just so loaded by the time we got that far. We couldn't get all the way to New York. There was a caravan I was going. And boy, but talk about missing a party, you know what I'm saying? I'd have probably died there, is the truth. Again, that's the kind of drinker and drugger that I really was. Legal doses on a daily basis, and I have absolutely no say about it. That's the thing I didn't understand before I came here. You know, I came young because I was in trouble. My sis, like I told you, St. Mary, she was trying to help me. She married an alcoholic, and she went to Al-Anon for a lot of years, and she nagged me in early 1977. She said, will you come to an AA meeting with me? And I mean, she's not a nag at all. She's actually a really nice woman. She's religious, but doesn't push it on you. You know, if I need anything, if I'm in trouble at all, I always call her, say, will you pray for me? Because whatever's going on, you know what I'm saying? And she's just a nice human being. I could always go stay at her house if I wanted. She loves me unconditionally. So I don't like to be mean to her, but she wanted me to go to an AA meeting. And I couldn't quite figure that out, right? Like, so she started nagging me about it. And I finally told her one day, if you never ask me again, if you never bring this up to me again, I'll go with you to an AA meeting. And so in early 1977, spring of 1977, my sister took my reluctant soul to an AA meeting with her. Speaker meeting, thank God. It was a big speaker meeting, though, up in Upland somewhere, Altaloma. I can't remember exactly, down in that area somewhere. Great big huge speaker meeting, hundreds of people there. And so I was already uncomfortable. I'm pretty sure I was loaded on something, too. I wasn't drinking. I had enough sense not to go in there smelling like booze. You know what I'm saying? But I was sure I was loaded on something. I couldn't have gone around that many people straight, for sure. And then she was driving. I never used to let her drive, either, because she, you know, she could only drink two drinks, then you had to take her home. So she couldn't be the one operating the car. She was not my designated driver, but she was driving that night. And so she wanted me to go to this damn birthday party with her after the meeting. Now, it's bad enough I've had to sit through, like, just hell. It's been hell for an hour and a half in my life. You know, it was an hour and a half meeting. Then she drags me to a birthday party. There's a reason that I'm telling you this story, because it is hell. It all plays out in the hand of providence, we'll say, for lack of a better way to describe it. And So I have to go with. I just reluctantly go along. I mean, I'm like kicking and screaming the whole way. I'm sure I put the big pout on. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure I have drugs in my purse. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure I must have gone to the bathroom two or three times. You know what I mean? While we were there, because I had to go. Now I had to actually talk to these people, which I'm still not great at. You know, if you have a conversation with somebody, you have to learn to listen. There's a real trick in there. You got to ask them questions and actually listen to the answer. Act like you give a shit at least for 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to pull off if you're like me. I really don't. You know, there's billions of people on the planet. That's how I see it. I can always find the next party, the next batch of people that I'm going to replace soon, I might add, because you can't hang with me long. I dust you. And, I mean, I put this young kid to bed three or four times a day. He has to take a nap just hanging around with me. So, I mean, like, I get rounds of people because I'm very hard on the nerves. Turns out about an hour of me is cute. After that, it's all south. And so anyway, I go to this meeting and I go to that birthday party, and three women have the audacity to hand me their number at the end of the night. I mean, I don't ask anybody. I have friends in AA that I've known for over 40 years, and I can't ask them for help. So I'm certainly not going to ask a stranger that I'm never going to see again, whose name I'm never going to remember. Oh, could you please give me your phone number? You know what I'm saying? I just can't even imagine. So they give me this, and I just, because I'm being polite, and my sister's friend, you know, take their number and put it in my purse. I'm going to forget about it for sure. But somehow I get home, and I randomly stick it in my bookcase. I'm a big reader, and I have a special Bible that my sister bought me with my name on it and everything. I've saved it all these years because it was a gift from my sister, right? And I just absentmindedly stick those phone numbers in that book. Now, I don't even know I put them in there. You fast forward from spring to late fall. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous on my own in late fall of 1977. I have no idea that I'm not going to be able to quit drinking and drugging. Well, I've actually got off all the drugs because I'm in big federal trouble by this time. I did some illegal things along the way that they really frowned on. And so I couldn't do it. I couldn't have any more drug charges, or it was going to be really sorry. And I don't like elevators much, so I don't think a jail cell and I were going to get along very long. The times I'd been there, I really hated it. We'd be going to court, and these women would be talking about, I can barely wait to get out so I can get a fix. And I'm like, I can barely wait out so I can get a shower, for crying out loud. I mean, I just can't stand it, right? Just even talking about it makes me feel creepy. So I didn't want to go to jail. I was motivated not to go to jail. And I didn't think you could go to jail for drinking. And back then, the truth is, back in the 70s, late 70s, they kind of gave women a pass. I mean, I've had a lot of cops take me home. I've had a lot of cops call my husbands, whoever they are at the moment. Parents. You can call my mother or my sister, but you can't call any of the other people because they're drunk or loaded, right? They'll come get you, but they're going to go to jail with you when they get there. So, you know, and we've all done that in our family. You know, the cops are obviously picking on somebody, and, you know, we're going to go help, and we all end up in jail. It's just a nightmare, right? So anyway, I go into AA on my own, and I start the whole process. I've never left Alcoholics Anonymous since early November 1977. I would like to tell you I've been sober since then. I have not. I had a very hard road in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was young. I was highly energetic. I'm tame now compared to how energetic I was back then. You know, I'm almost 65. Another couple months, I'll be 65. So I tell people at home I'm 75, and they all say, oh, you look so friggin' wonderful. I said, don't I? And no work either. Right? I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to be 60. I probably won't be here that long, so it's okay if you know how old I am. And but, you know, that's a long time is all I'm trying to say. That's a long time to be coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to face what's wrong with you. Now, unfortunately, I went to this really big group, the 502 Club in Covina. They think they're the sobriety capital of the world, I might add. That's their claim to fame. It's not true. I broke the mold there. I was one of those people that, my chain of people that tried to, a lot of people tried to help me there. A lot of really good people tried to help me. There's a lot of people with a lot of great sobriety in Covina. It's true. I'm still friends with a great many of them. Most of them died off, but I've still got some friends that are, well, they're almost kicking. They're on oxygen and shit because they smoke too long. But, you know, I mean, we're still friends. I'm afraid they're going to call the nurse when they need help, you know what I mean? So have to be careful who you have as friends in the long run. And but anyway, I'm just trying to say that I've lived in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have come to face myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've raised my children for as long as they would stay with me. At 9, my oldest daughter called the relatives for help. I'd already been in AA. She was born in 70, so that was 79. So I've been in AA 2 years by then, but, you know, I could get 30 days, 60 days. Once I got 6 months, it was like practically had a, you know, a hanging for me that day. How did you get 6 months? I don't even know how I got 6 months. I just white-knuckled it. I was not a comfortable character sober. Sobriety to me meant... I was irritable, restless, and discontent, like the big book talks about, like that doctor's opinion talks about. And it meant, and I knew that about myself. I couldn't do people. I couldn't sleep. I don't sleep anyway, but I didn't know that about myself yet. I thought it had something to do with the booze. And I just don't function. I'm not a normal person. You know, when I was 15 and got drunk the very first time, I remember thinking, well, this is what everybody else is doing out there. This is how they're all getting by. I've got the secret finally, because I felt connected to life finally. I don't think alcohol was called spirits in the old days on accident. I think that I think it's what I was always looking for, a spiritual connection. But when you're self-centered, like I am, it's very difficult to have any real feelings for other people unless you want something from them. And then you know what they like to eat, what kind of movies they want to go see. You know what I'm saying? You know everything about them if you want something from them. If you're a character like me, I found people very easy to manipulate out there. And I was still young enough, and I still, you know, I had a lot of things still going on in the real world, so to speak. I don't think that's the real world anymore. I really believe this is the real world right here. I've been afforded the opportunity to learn what was wrong with me. And the thing I didn't understand about myself from day one, I did not understand this. I thought when I drank those drinks at 15, my girlfriend and I both got drunk. We robbed my dad's bar. Well, actually, we have my baby brother that died of the heroin overdose, Joseph. We had him pick the locks because he was a great thief and we weren't any good at it. So he picked the locks on Dad's bar. We robbed Dad's bar and we went and got drunk, me and my girlfriend, right? We were both 15 and she got sick. We're still friends all these years later, I might add. Almost 50 years later, we're still friggin' friends. Can you believe it? She wasn't an alcoholic, it turned out. I got pissed off because I had to take her home. She threw up all over herself, right? And I had to take her home to her mother, so we all got in trouble. And I was so pissed off. To this day, I just don't know if I ever really forgave her for that. You know what I'm saying? And I see her, I go visit her, and she has a beer or two, right? It's like amazing. And she was always like that. She never drank much. She wasn't like me. And once I found alcohol and I found that relief that it gave me, I pursued it with a fury like I never pursued anything else. I loved how it made me feel until it didn't work anymore. And it didn't work anymore because I drank myself into a state of actual physical failure. You know, I'm a nurse and very aware. I drank and smoked myself to that space, right? Like where my liver was shutting down and had the beginning signs of emphysema. I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs. I'm 25 for crying out loud. I haven't even lived a quarter of a life yet. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't going to live like most of us. I probably wasn't going to make it past 30 or 40. I didn't think that. I was going to be ancient. Now I think I'm going to go to 150. I'm not giving in. And now I want to live forever. It's amazing how that all turns around. So anyway, I get this big effect off of alcohol. I chase that. I quit at 17 for a couple of 3 years, finish college. I go to college, get my degrees, and then I go on a date. I always have the sex life always plays into my story everywhere, right? You don't end up on your fourth husband because you're not interested in sex of some sort. Now, turns out once there was birth control, see, I come from the years when there was no birth control either. So once there was birth control, it turns out you have a whole lot freer life, and I dig that life a lot better. You don't have to get married if you don't want to. And I don't even know why I married the last guy. I don't know why I married the first three, but... So, I kept trying. I was a trier. I guess I was just raised in that. I was raised between that funny period, between 50s and about 90s. You know, there's this big, broad thing that happened in the consciousness of mankind. All these changes happened, and all this information became available to us, right? But the thing they couldn't get across to a person like me, because I don't think the medical profession even understands to this day. I know some doctors and nurses and therapists that are alcoholics or have children that are alcoholics or spouses, and they maybe understand a little better because they get beat up by us or they get beat up by the disease. But I don't think that even to this day, I think it's even hard to find an Alcoholics Anonymous, to tell you the truth. I've done a ton of traveling. I've looked for back to basics groups like yourself everywhere I've gone for almost 30 years now, and I've found many of them across our country and in Canada. And it's what I belong to. I belong to a back-to-basics group because it turns out that what was in that first 164 pages was really relevant to a character like me. I suffer. I don't have an alcohol or drug problem. I have a mental illness that is treated by alcohol or drugs. That was my answer. That wasn't my problem. Now, I got in lots of trouble with the answer, but it really wasn't my problem. And I didn't know that for years. I was really around here for... Well, I ended up staying sober since 87, so that's 10 years forward. And then I met some people that could actually help me. I managed to hang on for like a year, and I met them in 88. And they were all kinds of things had to happen. That story that I told you about those ladies, when I wanted to go to AA, somehow I remembered magically that I'd put those phone numbers in my Bible. I don't even know where that came from. You know what I'm saying? It had to be something outside myself. I don't call it God, out of respect to people who don't believe in God. And I don't call it any bad names either. I just say I have a higher power that somehow intervened. And I can't even rationalize it out. It's not logical that I would remember at the end of a drunken period for about 6 months, 7 months, whatever it was, that I had stashed those numbers somewhere. I don't even remember taking them out of my purse, but sure as shit, there were those numbers. And I picked that phone up. I came to one morning and I realized I was trying to kill myself, that I was actually trying to drink myself to death. I'd never, ever had that moment of clarity at all. And I called this woman, and first one's not there, second one's not there, but sure enough, that third one was there. And I don't know to this day who any of the three were. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup, you know what I mean? I have no idea who they were. So, but that woman came and got me, and she took me to a woman's meeting. And I was married to my second husband, who was a very nice man by this time. And I would have actually tried to hold on to him. He was really a sweetheart of a human being. Not a drunk, just a good guy all the way around, right? And I really tried to hang in there with the women, but I couldn't take up, I know how to knit and crochet, don't get me wrong, but I just couldn't take up some of the shit they were doing, right? And they were really offended by my mouth. I've so far been good, but I'll get to quit soon, so we might make it. Maybe. I usually apologize first from my mouth, but if I could control anything in my life, that would be the one thing I would control. If I could modify my behavior in any way, I would modify that. I'm not happy when I slip with something expletive in one of my 8 grandchildren, do you know what I'm saying? In front of them. Some of them go to church schools, do you know what I'm saying? They're nice kids. They don't deserve, none of them are boozers or druggies or anything. I can't even believe it, right? Missed the gene pool somehow. And I don't know, it's an odd life we get to live. So anyway, I get this whole, in 89 I run into these people, or 88 I run into these people, and by 89 I'm starting to get the idea, I'm starting to understand, okay, the reason you drink is because you're nuts. You know what I'm saying? And you can't take anything for it. It's a progressive mental illness, a deadly progressive mental illness, the book describes. A deadly progressive mental illness. Now if you tell me that Jordan has a deadly progressive mental illness, I've hung out with him plenty. I know that's true. But you tell it about me. You tell me that I... Well, my case is a little different. You don't seem to understand. You don't really get who I am, evidently. I'm not going to bore you, because if you can't figure it out on your own, you're not smart enough to be to begin with, right? I mean, I just go past the herds. And so, very twisted, this mental... And I do get it from both sides. I think I was genetically created from these people, right? And because I was weird before I ever started drinking. I was just a strange kid. If I couldn't get A pluses, I wouldn't go to school. Period. I didn't have to study hard for an A plus. My sister couldn't get an A plus if her life depended on it. You know what I mean? They would give her a buck for one and me 10 cents. I'm like, what the hell? You know what I'm saying? My whole family, for Christ's sakes. You won't even give me a dollar for a friggin' A plus. What the hell is wrong with you people? I'm just a perfectionist at heart. And if I can't win, I'm not playing. And that is my temperament all the way in every area. There's no area of my life that doesn't apply. I don't cook because I find it difficult. Now, I can cook some, but I can't do it like regular people do. Like, I don't know how people come home and actually go to the grocery store once or twice a week and pack things in to make meals for their lovely family who they're thrilled to have and actually pull it off every day. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how they do that. I mean, I can't do anything that regular. The only thing I've done that regular in my life is drink or drug and come to Alcoholics Anonymous. That is it. Everything else is bets are all off. I don't know who's waking up this morning. I might be the nice Gwen who's going to say hello or good morning and make coffee. Maybe. I could be the bitch who wants to know why the fuck you haven't gotten up and made my coffee. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? I don't know. So don't fucking put it on me. Like, don't expect me to behave. I'm mentally ill. I'm telling you straight out. If there were some meds I could take that would treat this, I would take them. They don't have any. The treatment for it is a spiritual answer. And unfortunately, the spiritual answer sounds lofty to a person like me. So I did the regular thing that most alkies did, studied meditation for 2.5 years, worked under different ministers, teachers, spiritual leaders, the whole nine yards, right? Back in the 60s, I did all the hallucinogens. I thought I was going to find something there, which I did actually find something interesting there, but it wasn't enough to carry me. It turns out I still had to drink or use every day. You know what I mean? I still had to fix myself chemically every bloody day to feel right in this world. So when they tell me I got to have a spiritual answer, I start thinking, well, you just pursue this. Get some info, right? Start practicing this shit. You know, you're smart. You can figure it out. Read a book or two. You'll know. Just like golf. I know how you're supposed to hold it. I've watched the videos. I've got clubs, the perfect little paisley bag that my husband's a professional golfer, the fourth one. He's a professional golfer, and so, you know, he bought me all the toys. And I'm still not able to golf. You know what I mean? My bag's got dust on it. But I'd still like to. I'm still young enough. You know, I'm only going to be 65 in January, so I'm young enough. I can still take it up. But I lost my train of thought. Let me get back to it, because that was the real point I wanted to make out of this whole long, boring story, was that I can't manage in this world sober. So I have to have the spiritual experience. So I think it's this, like, I got to understand God, or I'm going to get zapped, the burning bush. Something big is going to happen, because I'm that kind of character. Big things happen to me. You know what I mean? I don't live an ordinary life at all. I don't want one. I don't want one now. I never wanted one. I've always wanted an extraordinary experience. And it turns out I got it here. In Alcoholics Anonymous, with the people that the world gave up on, I got this extraordinary experience because I found out what was really wrong with me. I am mentally ill, but it comes out in the form of I'm worried about me over you all the time. It comes out in this form of selfishness and self-centeredness that I think everybody thinks like that. It turns out that most of the world doesn't think like that at all. You know what I mean? They really don't. Unless they're sociopaths or psychopaths or something. You know what I mean? They do think about their own navel all the time. And people like me have to drink themselves away from their own navel to get away from herself, right? You give the bitch a drink so you can friggin' think about something else for a minute. Just get the party on or something. Have a good time. Go dancing. Whatever. Change your environment, right? So I got to understand that self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. Like it says, I think it's 64 or 63, and there it talks about that. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And that is absolutely the root of my troubles. And I got really lucky. The people that helped me, one of the guys in that group, there's a very large group of people that came from Canada for the winters. They come to Palm Springs. That was my first winter in Palm Springs, and they just happened to come from Canada down there, this whole batch from like 40 of them. And they were players. They were all, you know, everybody's having a good time, you know. They're 400 years old. They got 35-year-old women. You know what I mean? It's just a joke already. I mean, diamonds and their motorcycles, boat, you name it. Everything was like, we were having a party, right? Sober party. And I started to understand that this selfishness was what was the reason that that's how the mental illness comes out. Let me put it that way. If it doesn't break out in alcohol and drugs, it breaks out in selfishness for somebody like me. And for me to have that spiritual experience, I had to remember somebody's name here. Start off with really simple stuff for me to begin with. I mean, I know Jordan because Jordan and I have been around each other for, I don't know, a couple years now, right? He's not having the greatest experience, but he's going to catch on here this time. I'm sure of it. I'm certain of it, actually. He's quiet this time. And he's got about 63 days. And he should have about 900 years. He's gotten hanging out with me forever, for crying out loud. I don't just give my time to anybody, if you know what I mean. I'm very selective about that. And no, I actually help a lot of the young people. And, you know, and I like that because it keeps me young. But I had to start learning about other people and where they were at and what they were doing. I did all the step work and all that stuff. But that doesn't give somebody like me a spiritual experience for any more than a minute. You know, I'm bored. Okay, that was good. What are we doing next, right? I mean, I want to be where the action is all the friggin' time. And this is where the action is. We really do get to go on this journey together as collective people, right? A collective consciousness. And I believe Alcoholics Anonymous has this collective consciousness worldwide. And I believe we're tapped into it. I believe all the information that was ever born into our society is available to us if we'll just pay attention. Sometimes it comes from the people that have got some time. Sometimes it comes from somebody who's just stumbled in the door. I've learned probably more from the new people than I've learned from the old timers. But, you know, old timers are like me. They talk too much, you know what I mean? They know fucking everything. You know what I'm saying? They're bored with their stories, too. You only get one story, it turns out. People say, well, good luck. I could have used it back when I was living this. You know, the mere fact I'm alive is really lucky. And, you know, I've been really lucky since I ran into these folks from 88, my friends from Canada, and they come back every year. I'm a member of what we, and I don't want to get too much into what I do. What I really do is I'm in a back to basics group like you are. It's why when I came here at the beginning of the year that I came back to these meetings was because you had big books on the table. You read the traditions every meeting. You were interested in the new people. You were talking about the stuff that was in the first 164 pages. I know I have it memorized. I've sat through so many big books, it's finally, the only information I have nowadays is really what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I've learned is that people would say things like, well, why don't you stay here and let us love you until you can love yourself, sort of Porsche. Well, I was 25 with a brand new Porsche when I drove up, and a husband that was a race car driver, do you know what I'm saying? I got a lot of love, but it wasn't the kind that we were really looking for, you know what I'm saying? I had to dump him. There was a whole bunch of guys that went to work, it turned out, in AA, and I thought, well, that's pretty entertaining, because I haven't had too many of those around for a while. If you let them go to work, then you have to be nice to them. See, if you go to work, and if it's your money, you never have to be nice to anybody. You can, and that's, I don't love money, I love power, it turns out. I love the power that money gave me. I could give a shit whether I have a pile of money or not. I just like power. It turns out I'm a control freak. You know, I'm just a mad woman. And Jesus Christ, I'm totally entertained most days, though. I'm very active with the people that I've been fortunate enough to help. Our group is very dedicated like you are. We go to a couple of meetings today. Most days, almost all of us make two meetings. You know, that started with a couple of women that I helped way back when, and little by little it's grown to a variety of other things. And there's a couple things I want to leave you with out of this big book. Well, it says in here on page 266. It's a story he sold himself short. It's about the guy that goes to Chicago, or he lives in Chicago. He goes to Akron and gets sobered up, blah, blah, blah. And he said, occasionally it is accorded to a few of us to watch something fine grow from a tiny kernel into something of gigantic goodness. Such has been my privilege, both nationally and in my home city, from a mere handful in Palm Springs. We have spread throughout the world, from a single member in the Winnipeg area, that's where they came from to help me, somebody sent them. I call it Neo, to be perfectly honest. I like the Matrix movie. I've only seen it about 250 times. From a single member in the Chicago area commuting to Akron, we now exceed 6,000. And I'm a member of a group that's grown over the years, not only in Palm Springs, but in a variety of spaces in Canada, Newfoundland, London, Westwood, Los Angeles. I mean, and they're like just exactly like the group in Palm Springs. I mean, we all get together every day, and we all talk about whatever insanity is going on, and you know, we try to help the new people, and the new people try to be patient with those of us that have been here too long, and that have outlived our usefulness. And, you know what I'm saying? They just tolerate us pretty much and take us to movies and buy us popcorn and say, just sit here and be quiet for an hour. I need a break from you. Could we go watch a movie? Sure, we'll watch a movie. And then we'll watch about five more. So that excessive temperament has not left me, but it's been turned out to be something useful in Alcoholics Anonymous. And talks about in page 152. I like the vision for you, like everybody does, because it's kind of flowery. And you know, Bill was showing off his poetry, I think, here. And it says, they want to know if there's a substitute for the alcohol and drugs, right? And he tells me, yeah, there is. There's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll find care. You'll find release from care, boredom, and worry, and that is really true. You pay attention to one alcoholic, I guarantee you, if they suffer from what I suffer from, you're going to be entertained. You might want to choke them by the end of an hour, but you're going to be entertained. And you just change people a lot. You get, there's 24 hours and you don't sleep much, you get 22 people in there. You know what I'm saying? You just keep the roll going. It's just like living in that other life. And it says the most satisfactory years of your existence will lie ahead. I find that's true for myself. The most satisfactory years of my existence absolutely been since 1989, I'll say. I've been sober since 87. I'll have 30 years next February. And it's been hard won, I might add. Not always been easy. Certainly hasn't been easy on the people around me. Very difficult on the people around me. I have a lot of people that really do love me in spite of myself and would really go to the ends of earth for me. And I would for them also. And I find a lot of those like, it's funny, when I come to another meeting someplace else, I just sort of go, oh, there's Kathleen, and there's Judy, and there's Big Mike. They're all here. You're all here. I just don't know your names yet. By the time I get to know your names, you'll wish I didn't, so I'll be calling you for something. And then it goes on to say, among them, you're going to make lifelong friends. You've bonded them in new and wonderful ties. You'll escape disaster together, and it's really true. We do escape disaster together. If I could do this alone, I would have been the absolute number one character that would have left AA immediately. Give me the little formula, the recipe, and I'm gone. And but I can't do it alone. And so my form of asking for help is I come to meetings, because I'm not really good at asking for help. And it's not got anything to do with ego, really. I just can hardly say I'm sorry and I need help. Those words can hardly come out of my mouth. And then it says you're going to commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. You will know what it means to give of yourself as others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And I have come to that place over the years. I've in and out of it lots of times. Like anybody that's had any length of sobriety, you know that some days you're really a spiritual giant and other days you're just a shithead, right? And you don't want to pay for lunch, you know, even though you have the money in your pocket or whatever, right? You know, I mean, you're just a shithead. You're just thinking about yourself. Or I am anyway. And I have come to understand that if I will continue to get up on a daily basis and come to the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that are available to me and practice the simple principles or outlines that are in that big book, they're very simple. A third grader could do it. Alcoholics, they have trouble with that. I have come to understand what it means to love my neighbor as myself, because I know that if the people around me in Alcoholics Anonymous do well because I'm so sick, and I am very lucky, I'm not one of those people that goes, oh, I've got all this time and I don't need to do anything. I've got all this time and I need to do way more than I did in the beginning. Way, way, way more. I'm way sicker than I was. Way sicker. It's absolutely progressed. I don't ever think about drinking or drugging, but I think about doing some other pretty squirrely things, right? I just can't spend any time up there. I want to live in this eternal moment that AA has given me. I sort of think I've already been I sort of think I'm almost like a walkthrough. It's almost like this is already, I've already made it to the other side. You know what I mean? If it gets any better than this, I'm going to be really surprised. I mean, I can't tell you how grateful I am, A, to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, B, to be healthy, for Christ's sakes. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't even be alive nor healthy if I'd managed to drink this long. Well, I couldn't have drank this long. I was already too cooked. So I'd like to encourage you, I'd like to really thank you for coming up and taking your cake tonight. Your dad talked about you this morning in the meeting. He said he had a son that had 5 years sober. And I said to Jordan, that's got to be his son. The voices sound alike, right? And sure enough, it was your 5 years. And I had a daughter that stayed with me for years in AA. I lost my baby brother after 6 months. I've had every kind of walk you could have here, I pretty much had to walk through. And I wouldn't trade one minute of it, not one bloody minute of it. The good, the bad, the in-between. It's been the greatest journey of my experience ever. And if I had to be an alcoholic and I had to be mentally ill to have it, I couldn't be happier to be that. Well, thank you very much for having me tonight.